Hello. Welcome to the first episode of the Open Physio Podcast, a semi-regular series where we sit down with authors who have submitted to the journal to try and unpack some of the rationale behind some of the work that they did. In keeping with one of the objectives of the Open Physio Journal, we'll probably also use this as an opportunity to dig into some of the research methods and analysis that authors have used to try and provide some background and context for novice authors in this area. But today I'm going to be talking to James McLaughlin, whose article that he submitted to the journal has been one of the most popular that we've published. James is the director of Advanced Neuro Rehab in Adelaide, South Australia, where he works clinically as a neurological physiotherapist. James is also a part-time associate professor at Flinders University, working as a teaching specialist in neurological physio. James has degrees in physiotherapy from the University of South Australia, clinical neuroscience from Queen Square Institute of Neurology, University College London, and a PhD from the University of New South Wales. James has experience in research in gait, balance, and dizziness in various populations, and also an interest in movement recovery, motor control, and rehabilitation in people with all neurological conditions. Today we talk about James's rationale for why he wrote the paper and what he hopes it will achieve in the community. And without further ado, I give you James McLaughlin. James, welcome to the very first podcast episode for the Open Physio Journal. Before we get started, James, maybe you could just say a little bit about yourself, where you are working, and what kind of practice you're into.
So yeah, I'm a neurological physiotherapist with a bit over 20 years now experience in neurophysio. We've got a practice here in Adelaide, South Australia, called Advanced Neuro Rehab, where we do vestibular rehab and also neurological rehab, so we get a good mixture of caseloads in the field. In addition to that, I'm also associate professor at Flinders Uni, where I head up neurological physiotherapy program within our clinical rehabilitation master's program. So I work with a lot of postgraduate physios who are studying. Qualified physios who are studying neurological physiotherapy to further extend their practice. And I developed that course, and it got up and running in about 2011. And so it's been running ever since. And we've got physios Australia-wide studying that course. And so in my now only one day a week, I teach that advanced practice in neurophysio, and I also teach clinical neuroscience and motor control. So they're my two big passions. So I stay heavily involved in that particular area. I've moved out of research now too, which is one of the reasons why I started working on the paper that we're talking about today, because I'm now a teaching specialist, so I'm focusing more on the teaching side of things, and I'm sort of getting into more how to improve clinical reasoning, and I suppose that's where the article came from.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks very much. You've shifted into the teaching space, and you say that that's kind of part of the reason for why you wanted to work on this article. Can you tell us just very briefly the article is about? And you know, what is the problem that you saw in your practice that you thought that this article was going to help move forward or contribute to?
So I suppose the article was a long time coming. So as a neurophysio, we always, and it's the same with all physiotherapy, we always have trouble articulating what it is that we actually do, and also having a more of a common language to describe what we're doing, to therefore share knowledge and come up with collaborations and innovations with other areas. So for example, I've got lots of friends who are very good sports physios and work at the elite level of sport, and I'm really fascinated by what they're doing, and I see lots of common aspects then when I'm working with my, say, vestibular patients or my neurological patients. And so and probably for the past 15 plus years, I get asked occasionally, I run these courses called what we call a balance and motor control, which is professional development courses that sort of fit outside the scope of university. So it's more just talking about things like motor control theory, coaching techniques, different aspects of motor learning, and different aspects of the brain and what we know about the brain and neuroscience, which is relevant to to physiotherapy. And so probably over that 15 years, I've collected information, started to put it together, and then realized that this could possibly be a good way of putting it together in some kind of format where the information I've gathered over that time, I can make it a bit more accessible to the next crop of physiotherapists, knowing full well that that information is not readily available in journal articles and in textbooks. We really do get a mixed picture in relation to guiding principles, if you like, to guide treatment and to improve clinical reasoning in that space. So that's where it actually came from. So the concept was pretty easy, but the desire really is that those 10 guiding principles actually that I'm interested in, particularly in relation to motor control, have really improved my practice. So I'm trying to then make that, articulate that better to sort of improve the physios I work with and the students, the postgraduate students I work with, and hopefully then the undergraduate students as well. So, because neurophysio is a bit daunting at times. And I suppose the other thing too, probably one of the worst areas of neurophysio historically has been some of the sort of, people come from different backgrounds and that they learn techniques from different approaches. And this is the same I know in manual therapy, for example, in other areas of physio, but the whole approach aspect to things and some of the arguments that as a professional we get into are a little bit embarrassing, I feel. And I suppose working with postgraduate physios all the time, we actually sit down and nut it out, work with us. We're all on the same page. But some of the conflicts we have as a profession do actually stem down to poor communication and a poor ability to explain what it is that we're actually doing. And also one of the things we're pretty keen on at Flinders University is for physios to be innovative. So much of the last 20 years, our profession has focused on evidence-based practice, which is fantastic, and it's a duty, if you like, that we have to keep going with. But in the same breath, what it's done is it certainly hasn't encouraged a lot of innovation, because many of the things that we trial with randomized controlled trials and evidence-based are quite singular and quite more simple, easy to define aspects of our treatment that fit the research protocol, but don't necessarily reflect what we do in practice. So that's where like journals like Open Physio Journal, for example, and other areas, I think, will be a growing space, because I think we need an avenue to spread other forms of information that physiotherapists can lap up quickly and use in their clinical practice.
I mean, there's a couple things that you talked about there that I'll come back to, but just to pick up on the last point that you made about the journal looking to distribute ideas, you know, fairly rapidly. I think we do want to publish that kind of the research into physiotherapy education, but we're also looking for a way to people to share innovative ideas without having to think that you have to run a 6-month trial, or that you have to reduce your idea into something so simple that it can be written up as a protocol that's going to get through peer review and the ethics research committees. So it sounds like your article was a synthesis of about 15 years of experience, plus all of your learning, your thinking, your reading. I mean, the reference list on this thing is significant. But I think that kind of speaks to the point that you were making. It's that you've, you know, over the last 15 years, you've drawn together an enormous amount of experience and expertise in the work that you've been doing. And this is a synthesis of all of that in a way to try and articulate the some guiding principles for the profession in a way that doesn't get mixed up in the politics that can sometimes surround, you know, what kind of physio are you? Are you this kind of physio? Do you use this kind of approach? When you're talking about principles of rehab, you kind of sidestep that kind of tribalism to some extent and say, you know, these are just principles. It doesn't matter what kind of physiotherapist you are. You know, these are some principles that anyone can draw on and use to improve their practice. Is that about right?
Absolutely. And as neurophysios, you know, there are some approaches of teaching, and all approaches of teaching I've come across in neurophysio, even from those who are from different factions, if you like, they have really good, there's lots of really useful bits of information there. Sometimes we overcomplicate things, and then sometimes we oversimplify things as well. Some of the overcomplication becomes from the fact that we are drawn towards areas of neuroscience and neuroscience papers, which are actually very difficult to read and understand. And therefore, we can over-interpret the results or say, oh, that means, you know, that works with my patient. And the bottom line is, in we're working with, the more you learn, obviously, the more you realize what we don't know. And having studied neuroscience early in my career, so I studied clinical neuroscience in London back in 2004, and I probably had an early appreciation of putting that knowledge into perspective. And then realized that there's a lot of good stuff here, but there's a lot of stuff that's really interesting, but it's probably not going to affect our practice. start to realize that, oh, there's some parts of neurophysio where we overcomplicate and we overinterpret. But then on the same breath, there are areas of physiotherapy where we have oversimplification and far too, we dumbed it down a little bit too. And that was supported in many ways by research and also a reflection of our outcome measures that we actually use. Some of our outcome measures in physio are pretty basic. And, you know, in doing an intervention, practicing outcome measures just to, you'll improve your outcome measures is not really great science. And so there was an intermediate there to be able to say, well, let's think about training principles. And if we're truly going to be innovative, and like the young physios I work with, they're really smart. And so they're going to take the profession forward. So if we can give them a bit of a platform of history, then they can take that forward with just their own ideas for treatment, but also with technology as it's coming at us so quickly. I'm excited by that as well. So yeah, it's certainly one thing, and particularly in Australia, we've got, you know, we have these factions of, you know, motor relearning program, which is more of a task specific functional approach, and then you've got the historical stuff, neurodevelopmental stuff from Bobath. Both of them are actually really fantastic, but there's some pretty there's not a lot of collaboration there, and there's a lot of angst and misinformation there that really, we're now at a point where we need to move on. So hopefully training principles mean you can look at what advantages something might have in a certain area for a certain patient group and what advantages the other one have, and how much commonality there is between them as well. One thing that I find with innovation, if we think about the future, I don't think we should always be looking forward to in our field. You can look backwards and find stuff that's still really useful, like, you know, stuff, there's, you know, old manual therapy techniques, there's old ideas, there's even old technology that's gone out of fashion, which is still, you know, could be redone and redone better. I don't think we're ready to move on to everything being brand new, more just evaluate what we do. Yeah,
no, absolutely. And I think this idea of looking to the past to see where we want to go, where we want to move to in the future, I think is brilliant. The other thing you mentioned was just making this accessible. I think I'm going to use that just to lead into just how accessible people are finding this article. And they definitely are finding it accessible. You submitted in May 2020. Straight off the bat, the article is doing relatively well. It's kind of getting quite a lot of visits. But then in December, we go from an average of about 50, 60 reads per month. In December, we jump to 2,200 reads. Now, what happened in December, James?
All I remember is I was pretty keen to get it published before Christmas. And I knew My wife and I are pretty busy with setting up a new clinic here in Adelaide. So I really wanted to get that done and then be able to move on to the next phase, which is evaluating these principles in a different way. But anyway, I think the day you told me, well, the day it was accepted, I put up on Facebook, and we've got a neurophysio Facebook group through the Australian Physiotherapy Association here in Australia. I put it on that, and I put it on Twitter as well. And with Twitter, it's a lot of academics on Twitter, and there's a lot of a lot of physios on there now, it seems to be. So that's all I did. And then I remember that day there was a lot of interest coming straight back on social media saying thank you for writing the paper. So I suppose it struck a chord, and the general theme I got early on was this is helping perhaps other professions understand what we do. So I think maybe physios and in the working in this area find it frustrating or find it difficult to articulate all the weird and wonderful things that we actually do, or what we consider when we're treating our patients. And maybe it's just a high level of satisfaction that there's a paper that's not, even though it's got a big reference list, it's not too long a paper, that they can use as a basis to a deeper understanding of the neurophysio role. But that's all I can understand.
You know, just as you were talking now, I just thought, you know, so much of our research is forcing us to go narrower and narrower in scope. You know, you specialize and you specialize and you specialize. And so you're looking at something that's increasingly narrow in scope and of interest to fewer and fewer people. And I think what's interesting about your article is that this article doesn't go narrow. This goes broad. I wonder if this is what is so kind of interesting about the article is it is broad. It does appeal to a very wide group of physiotherapists. You've mentioned that, you know, this may be applicable to people outside of the profession. And it aims to be very practical. This isn't something that you kind of, it's a theoretical idea. There are ideas in your article that can be implemented today. And so I wonder if that maybe accounts for some of the kind of massive interest that people are showing in this article.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, I suppose when I teach balance and motor control courses, there's a lot of chat. So it's not always very practical. But when we start going off on tangents, we take the ideas that we're talking about and then just give examples. And I suppose one of the other things we don't have in our profession is to say that we've got physiotherapists here. They're very intellectual, they're pretty smart, and they make pretty good choices most of the time. So, but what we don't always have in my profession is lots and lots and lots of treatment ideas. It's not as if there's a book saying here's 250 treatment ideas for gait re-education. But you could go to the evidence-based practice, you know, evidence, and go to Cochrane reviews and that kind of stuff, and it's then a very simplified language and it's very generalized, or there's not enough evidence yet to suggest this, or so you do get knocked about by research with all this work going into research, but then not a lot of usable output at the end of it. So I think there's definitely a role for a broad way of thinking, and also encourage a creative way of thinking as well, which our profession is really creative, and we don't want to simplify our interventions because the research that is we spit out is simple as well. So you know, there's an amazing innovative idea. I think most of the motor control information I get, it's got nothing, physios wouldn't come across it. It comes from the coaching literature. So sports people interested in, you know, people, you know, bowling action of cricketers and how do they hit the ball in baseball, and these amazing feats of motor control that we're capable of doing, and gymnastics coaches, and when they go hands on and when they go hands off, it's a whole new world out there that we don't always get access to in physio. And I think we've got to share ideas across those as well. So yeah, hopefully I can't really know why it's popular, but it's good news because it means that maybe we can have an impact, and maybe researchers could take these ideas and look at them further. We know in stroke research, for example, and I've been teaching stroke rehab for for 15 plus years, that you could go to the clinical guidelines and say, how do you improve standing in stroke? And it says things like, the guidelines say you should practice standing in stroke. And I mean, that's what we've got. Now, practicing standing, you know, there's probably 500 different ways of going about it, depending on how. And obviously, stroke research is limited by the fact that you could do a trial of 20 stroke patients, but they're all different. One's left hemisphere, one's right, one's got deep brain changes, one's got brainstem, one's ataxic, and one, you know, one's had multiple strokes, one's hemorrhagic. It's a really mixed picture, and I think the research suffers because of that. And stroke, because it's a big leader, there's lots of money spent in stroke research. I think they've realised that going forward, we really need to tidy up the what we're doing a little bit more, rather than just things like, you know, it's not just about increasing dose, and it's not just doing task specific practice. There could be more things that we could possibly do. Those things are important, but they're like your government saying, what do we do, you know, to control spending in the economics. You know, the only lever they can pull is to change interest rates and with the banks and that kind of stuff. So there's only some levers you can pull. You know, when you close that door and you're in the gym with your patient, there's so many things you can do.
And I think, obviously, in this article that you've submitted, I mean, it really does go broad. There's really great examples that you provide across all the different principles. But I think its utility is that people can download this. As you say, it's not a very long article, a little bit of an introduction, and then you dive straight into the principles. There's a great summary of all of the principles, and then you've got the tables with all of the specific examples that people can try and use. So I think, you know, that I really want to encourage people to go and have a look at it. We're going to obviously include all of the information about the article in the show notes. Is there anything else that you want to mention about the article or about any other work that you're busy with at the moment?
I suppose one thing worth mentioning is what to do next with this kind of thing. I mean, these are guiding principles. The thought I had to do next was, we're using it with physios to see using the principles with an individual patient to see how important they are in relation to the patient right in front of them. And then when they choose an intervention, what's the focus of that intervention? So when do you decide which of those principles are important? And distinguish those two, because like, you could have a patient where they've got a problem. They've got major problems with attention, and they've got major biomechanical problems. But your treatment may not be focused on those that day, because the patient's goals are different, or you know that their splint's not arriving till next week and you're focusing more on another area. You might be focusing more on some other aspect of learning, or really talking through your program to improve their self-efficacy. So sometimes as physios, we're quite critical of each other. You know, you can walk past and say, oh, I see those physios, they do a lot of work on strengthening. They do a lot of work on strengthening, but you don't realize what they might have done before that. They might have really focused on balance, and they might have really focused on motivation and education before that point. So I think hopefully this is a way of making us all share ideas a little bit further. And then also I want to see how usable it is, how easy it is. And also because I do this every day just about, you can use it with patients as well. I mean, they're broad ideas, but it's not rocket science. And patients, if they understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, then you can invite them to design or choose what direction they want to take things as well. And that's pretty powerful, because in the end, they're the one often in charge of what's happening. They're the one doing most of the interventions themselves. If they've got the capacity to do that. So I'm hoping my new role as a teaching specialist means that I can start to evaluate those things a little bit more, which would be a lot of fun then, and might create something innovative. And I suppose the other thing I could mention too is technology. So as physios, we're getting approached more and more by bits of technology. So neurophysio, it'd be robotics. We've got virtual reality devices. I work a lot with concussion, so we're getting a lot of these eye tracking devices and things that show great potential in assessing and also opening up the world for interventions. A lot of the technology is amazing, but it doesn't really ever hit the ground, and we don't necessarily use it very much. And I think if we can, as a profession, learn to interact with these technicians and engineers, if you like, when they're designing, and software engineers, when they design these things, to tell them more about what we want and why we want it, then I think technology is more likely to get its strike rate a little bit higher, and so that they'll be able to come up with devices which really fill some holes in our practice and really help out our patients a lot more, because technology is going to move much faster than research can. So if they want these devices out and they want us to buy them, or our patients to buy them, I think there's a relationship there that as physios we can learn to improve in that area. A bit like, you know, drug reps and doctors had that relationship for such a long time. I think physios and technology, and as you would know in the, you know, education space, that if we can talk to these people about what it is that we want, I think we could get some really exciting things happening pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that idea of reaching out across the kind of disciplinary boundaries, not only within the health professions, but also looking outside, as you mentioned, working with engineers, software engineers, especially as I see things moving more and more into kind of software, even if we're talking about robotics, all of that is controlled by software. And so being able to speak across these different divides, these different domains of knowledge, I think is going to be really important. Great. I think that's a good place to wrap up, looking forward and asking what's next. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with the movement principles, James. So it'll be great to see the follow-up paper. I wish you all the best. And thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to both publish a different paper and come on to the podcast today.